Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry and the airport customer experience improvements over the last couple decades. Today, we're talking with Paul McGinn, founder of Marketplace Development. Paul recently retired as the CEO of Marketplace, but retains a director title and is still active on a day-to-day basis. Paul, thanks for taking some time.
Andy, great to be with you.
Thanks for taking some time out of retirement. How's that going? What's keeping you busy these days?
You know, so far, so good. I've kind of leaned into it, and it has been a very nice opportunity. I guess it's been about 18 months now, and, you know, still involved with Marketplace as an advisor and director of the company, but leaving, you know, appropriately all the day-to-day stuff to Mike DeCasola and his great team. Serving on a couple of boards here in Boston, which keeps me busy. But the most important thing is I'm enjoying the time that I now have to enjoy my family and take advantage of some of that free time to travel and enjoy life a little bit. Just got back from 2 weeks in Greece, and I recommend it.
2 weeks in Greece, that sounds delightful. So you're not among the folks that are retiring from their day jobs and then heading right into an LLC and becoming a consultant in the industry then?
That is not the path that I chose to follow. After a long run of running the company and doing several other challenging things in my career, I wanted to treat myself to some flexibility in my time and the opportunity to kind of pursue some other interests. So all is well.
Sure. Hard to blame you for that. So you say you're still an advisor and a director with Marketplace, but not involved in the day-to-day. You know, can you describe a little bit about what your role is? I mean, are they calling you in for big decisions, or what does that role look like?
Well, you know, it really is much more to serve as a sounding board from time to time for the leadership team there. Over 30 years being with the company, you do accrue some experience and some, but also by stepping outside of the day to day, you also have some perspective. Mm-hmm. My role really is to share that to the extent that it brings value to the company, and to, you know, be available to them, on an as needed basis, when situations require it. It's been a real privilege for me to continue to work with the company in that manner, and to see the growth and development of the team that is carrying on now.
Sure. Paul McGinn, founder of Marketplace Development. What drew you to airports in the first place? You started the company in 1993, if memory serves. What got you into airports in the first place?
You know, interestingly enough, I in the 80s worked for Massport in Boston. For those of you who are listening who don't kind of know the governance structure of Logan Airport, Massport is the public authority that runs Logan Airport. But most interestingly, when I worked at Massport, I didn't work at Logan. I worked on the real estate side of the Port Authority, dealing with other real estate assets that they had. I had left that job and was working on other real estate activities in Boston, mostly activities that were public-private partnerships between the city of Boston and private development groups. And the state and private development groups. But one of the things that drew me back to the airports along, and most very important to mention, that drew me back to the airports with my partner, Bob Weinberg, who really was the driving force behind the creation of Marketplace, was that historically, at Massport, Bob had served as chairman of the Port Authority. And one of the things that he really tried very hard to do in his role as chairman was to find ways to enhance the passenger experience at Logan through implementing some of the skills and business practices that were present in the private sector. And that really, you know, was the seed of the idea of doing more of a developer model rather than the customary operator model that had been, you know, the dominant way of doing concessions at airports back, you know, prior to the early 90s. I was working with Bob on other projects in the city. We became aware of the fact that the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey were on the verge of doing an experiment to select a private developer to operate or to redevelop and operate the concessions at the old Central Terminal building at LaGuardia. We took a long, hard look at that RFP. And thought it was really interesting and an interesting opportunity to both to expand the business activities that we were doing and also to pursue something that, you know, Bob had seen as a solid business approach to improve the passenger experience at airports. So we jumped into that fray, created the company to respond to that RFP, and ultimately we're successful. So that was the seed of the business. We're very fortunate to win that competition against several formidable companies, and it kind of went on from there.
Okay, let's expand on that a little bit. That model at the Central Terminal at LaGuardia. What did you know, what was this new model that you brought to the table there? You know, what were you able to bring to the Central Terminal there that maybe wouldn't have worked under a more, you know, under the more traditional models that had been in play?
Sure. You know, I think what we were looking to do, and interestingly enough, the Port Authority was pursuing at the time, was to create a partnership between us and the airport. It was a partnership that was built with incentives on both sides to hopefully get a result that was more successful in terms of you know, creating a better passenger experience. You know, what that led to was, you know, a significant change, and it would be hard to describe the condition of the concessions in that terminal at the time, but, you know, it really reflected, you know, what was the standard condition of many airports at the time, which was, you know, a low quality, high prices, bad choices, and, you know, and it was something that was really an insult to the traveling public. What we were able to do under the new developer model, more partnership-oriented model that we struck with the Port Authority, was to implement things that are more commonplace now. I mean, it was competitive operations of multiple tenants. It wasn't a sole operator. It was street pricing. It was local choices. It was ACDB participation. It was, you know, a real keen focus on marketing and customer service. You know, the old Central Terminal building, which no longer exists and was replaced a few years ago by the wonderful job that Vantage did down at LaGuardia with their partners, was a you know, kind of a wretched place because of its age and condition, but it was something that I think we were able to enhance dramatically by, you know, fundamentally changing the model of how the concessions were done.
The developer model certainly did turn the traditional way of doing things on its head. You know, you mentioned LaGuardia. You know, a lot of folks, when we start talking about the evolution of concessions, mentioned the BAA program at Pittsburgh that overhauled things there. Why hasn't the developer model, I mean, you see the developer model, you know, pop up here and there in airports and variations of it these days, but why hasn't it become more widespread? Sometimes you hear about there's another, it becomes, you go from needing to have a win-win or a win-win-win to needing to have yet another party trying to make sure that they get what they need out of it too. But in your sense, why hasn't the developer model become even more prominent than it has?
You know, there's a saying that I think many people in the industry have heard more than once, which is, if you know one airport, you know one airport.
Sure.
And I've seen many people make the error feeling that they have developed a great expertise and the perfect solution by having solved a problem at one particular airport and think that they can apply it to all locations. The truth of the matter is that every airport is different, certainly different physically, different geographically, different politically in terms of how it's governed and organized. Different management-wise in terms of the structure of management and the individuals that are managing it. So no one model is perfect for all situations. Obviously, over the past three decades now, there has been, pretty intense competition, both between those of us who promote the developer-manager model, the operators who, want to advocate for their model. I think that is healthy, and it's, a sign of, a strong business. I think in response to your question, it really is, the answer is, one size does not fit all. In fact, as we have pursued business over the years that we've been around, have really had to modify and adjust our model, not because we were finding errors in it, but in order to customize it for what the airports wanted. And that's something that we continue to do and are always willing to do. Because again, you got to acknowledge that every situation is different, and every airport and every geographic location really has different requirements.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I wanted to get into we talk a little bit about why it hasn't gotten a little bit more widespread over the years, but in your experience at LaGuardia, and then over the years as you won some more contracts. Over the years, what would you say that you mentioned politics, and certainly the developer model, is perhaps one way of being able to keep some of the politics that get involved in concessions at arm's length a little bit. Maybe touch on that and what what you've picked up and what you think the developer model has contributed in the airports that you've been involved in and that other developers have overseen.
Sure, I think that. Probably the most significant thing that the developer model has provided has been the opportunity for the airports that have chosen to use the model to deal with their procurement and selection of a business or a company to contract with in a single shot, as opposed to repeatedly having to process multiple contracts by doing the leasing themselves or having multiple operator agreements that they have to process over time. It really, when it is structured that way, it really provides an opportunity where the airport, works through its process, but then has basically outsourced to the developer, to the manager, the responsibility to put a program together, to be responsible for that, to lease it, to manage it, and to deliver the revenue that they're on the hook for. I think the net effect of that is that you see many of the benefits that airports were hoping to get in terms of increased revenue, which comes from increased sales, increased customer choice, increased customer passenger satisfaction, and flexibility. The flexibility that, every decision that is made is not perfect and not right. So over time, things need to change. We see that everywhere that we as individuals, interact with commerce and business, that, the store at the local shopping center or the shop in your community changes, isn't there forever. Things change. And that's just a response to the market. And a response to what, trends are, what customers want, and what's successful. Under our model, that's a possibility, and that happens. And you end up not being stuck with dated, tired, unsuccessful concession activities. I think the net effect is that, the airport, ends up having the success of satisfied customers, the revenue that brings, more opportunity for people in the community, because we, always focus on local tenants, ACDB tenants. I would like to think that ultimately it's a win-win for everyone.
Paul, as you've worked over the years, would you say there are any of the enhancements that have gone on in customer service and concessions over the years? Is there anything that you think you've brought to the table that otherwise under another model might never have been never have made it into an airport? Anything that you've kind of contributed because you had the opportunity to say, hey, let's take a chance on this?
I think one of the things that we have done since the very beginning is to, have a very integrated customer service training program, one that wasn't just marketplace coming at it and saying to our tenants, this is what you need to do as a concessions tenant. It was more broadly based in terms of integrating it with what the airport needed, what the individual tenants needed for their operation.
Okay.
And I think the net effect of that is that it really was done, unlike many customer service programs, in a way that was based on how the associate in a store or the manager in a store or a restaurant is being perceived and interacts with a passenger. Because the passenger doesn't look at them exclusively as a representative of brand X, whatever the store or the restaurant may be. They look at them as part of that airport, and they need to be able to treat that person in a way that is that really has a 360 kind of approach in terms of helping them solve their problem, mm-hmm. and understanding what their needs are. And I think beyond that, early in the game, we jumped in there with things that are now pretty commonplace, but things like secret shopping. In order to make sure that that our tenants got viable feedback in a way that had been proven in other settings outside of the airport to really provide the kind of feedback that that created an opportunity for concessions and stores and restaurants to improve what they do by offering that objectivity and that feedback. So, you know, a lot of times it wasn't, you know, groundbreaking, shocking activities. It was really taking best practices from other venues, other locations, and implementing them at the airport. Sounds simple, not always easy. institutionally, airports tend not to like to change. So being the change agent for that was always a challenge. But at the end, you know, really proved to be worthwhile in terms of developing a better product.
Sure, sure. And from what you're describing with your first, your onset into concessions at LaGuardia versus where that airport and where most of the industry is now, night and day. I'd like to, you know, maybe take a little more global look here at the industry, you know, regardless of the model. Just you know, what have you seen over the years, the last 20 years or so, in terms of just how the industry has continued to evolve? What do you like about what you see in the airport today, as compared to, you know, when you were getting started and frankly when we were getting started with this conference as well?
Yeah, you know, I guess first of all, I would really offer a lot of credit to your publication, your organization, both in its early days as Airport Retail News and more recently as Airport Revenue News, and in its current form, and you know, the creation of the Airport Revenue Conference over the past 20 years. You, along with those of us in the industry who have you know, been active in creating change and updating how the industry performs, I think have done collectively have done a good service to the airports by making it a more formalized industry. You know, that it really was seeking to examine what were best practices, what were best business models, what were best ways to interact with the traveling public, and what were the best ways to interact between the businesses like Marketplace and all the other companies and the airports themselves. And so through things like the ARN conference, your magazine, and other activities that have happened through the other industry groups, you know, there have been a lot of opportunities for dialogue between the airports and the companies that serve those airports. And I think that's been for the betterment and for the good. And it has led, I think, to the opportunity for you know, the industry to really continue to grow and to evolve and to, you know, provide, again, you know, what is the most important thing, you know, better service to the traveling public.
Sure, sure. Is there anything you'd like to see change? This is Paul McGinn, the recently retired CEO of Marketplace. He's founder of Marketplace, and he retains today an advisory role with the company. What would you, on the other side of the coin, like to see changed? What are one or two things that you'd like to see added to the industry that maybe aren't present in the model today?
You know, I guess one of the things that has, I guess, we've been watching it happen slowly over the past several years, is the, you know, phenomena of consolidation in the business. You know, at the tenant level, you know, we have seen over the past several years now, the travel convenience newsstand operators consolidate down into a couple of big players. Mm-hmm. And then over that, we have seen those companies you know, expand their operation into food and beverage. And then we have seen those companies get acquired by international partners. And now, you know, we've even seen in on the food and beverage side and the travel convenience side, combination of Dufry, Autogrill, and Host into one, which I guess this week is now getting rebranded as Evolata, I guess is the name. But I mean, I think those that kind of activity tends to happen in a lot of industries. So I can't say that it's a bad thing. And I'm sure there are great advantages to it. I think, though, it does give us reason to put up some caution signs and to evaluate, you know, really how airports and others in the industry need to respond to it. Because the fear that you have, or the typical concern you have, is that through consolidating to a smaller number of very large companies, that at the airport level, you start to lose competition. Competition over the past 30 years has been enhanced by the creation of many more companies in the business than were there 30 years ago. Now, as that consolidates again, you know, the question becomes, are we cycling back to something that we saw in the late, you know, in the 80s and early 90s that didn't exactly give us the results we want? I think from and then from the tenant side, it also, you know, creates a concern about what impact does that have on the small operator? What impact does that have on the local tenant? What impact does that have on the ACDBE? Those are all areas that we have all sought to enhance and grow opportunity for over the past 30 years. You know, not saying that that isn't going to continue to happen, but I think we are at a time in the business because of consolidation that we have to be cautious about that. We got to watch out for it. And, you know, I would suggest to the airports and those who are the decision makers out there that some guardrails have to be put up to really make sure that those things that are important in terms of creating those opportunities for local businesses and for ACDBs, you know, continue to be there in a meaningful way. You know, I think the other things that are going on out there in the business that we have to look at carefully is post-pandemic, not only in the airport world, but, you know, it seems like in all forms of business, there is a dramatic shortage of labor. Securing the workforce that is needed to run a good concessions program at any airport has always been a challenge, given the security concerns, given the hours of operation, given that it, you know, most airport locations are relatively remote from where people actually live. I think that's an increasing challenge now. And, you know, having good people serving the traveling public, I think is an important, you know, probably the most important ingredient to having great concession programs. So how that gets treated, how that gets dealt with, it certainly is it's a current problem and is going to be an ongoing problem for the future. You know, there's some solutions out there. Some of that is about, you know, improving working conditions and improving what people earn. There are certainly some solutions which are non-human solutions. That's, you know, it's technology. I think that, you know, technology in the concessions world has been implemented in some very helpful ways. I think it needs to be done, you know, with in a cautious and in a careful way, because ultimately, I do think people like to interact with people. And there are great kiosk solutions and there's great robotic solutions to different things that are out there. And there's great uses of AI and so forth that can help expedite a process or improve a process. But I don't think the human factor can be overlooked. You know, as the quality of air travel outside of concessions kind of gets dummied down and diminished over time by the airlines, I think it is really important that the concessions world continue to remember that they've got a responsibility and a need to really make concessions a human experience. So I think that's going to be an issue going forward.
Sure. That's you touched on a lot of different things there that we could talk for a long time on. But you know that human piece, balancing between making sure you've got the right people on the job and the right technology to complement that, got to be a huge issue today. I've got a 9-year-old who I'm not sure would like to communicate with people in any meaningful way if she could have a screen that she could be on the entire time. But is there anything you can point to from your days that were best practices in terms of, you know, hiring and retaining employees and keeping them in an industry where it is challenging to, I mean, you've got getting to work and getting badged and all of the different challenges that go. Were there any strategies that you utilized in Marketplace that were particularly effective in handling those issues?
Well, I think it probably is. I'm going to make it sound simpler than it really is, but I think you got to treat people well. You know, it is for us, it has always been a team approach, and you know, and an understanding that those on the team, you know, all have to carry their own weight and have to be respected for it. And you know, when I talk about respect, I not only mean, you know, the level of respect that's afforded to someone in terms of how we interact, but it certainly is the level of respect that is afforded to someone in what the working conditions are that you provide to them. You know, that is about compensation. That is about the type of assistance that you give them to, you know, accommodate their working conditions, whether it be, you know, extra time to get through security and, you know, or whether it be a work schedule that has, you know, and some flexibility to the extent that you can provide that. You know, we were always very proud of the fact that we and our team and still today have tremendous longevity in our personnel. You know, I like to think it is because of the fact that we treated people well. And that we were, you know, a good team that supported each other. So I think you have to continue to extend that at all levels of the company. Hopefully that helps address some of the employment issues of today.
Sure. A couple airports, Pittsburgh, for one, have even gone the route of on-site childcare, which who knows, maybe that's, you know, maybe there's a second level in the childcare program as kids get a little older, where it could be a job training program. You've got Billy and Susie on the airway changing out lug nuts on the plane tires or something like that. But that's certainly one of the huge issues of the day. One of the other ones you brought up that popped out, you know, you talked earlier about how Marketplace went about working with local companies and ACDBE companies. And, you know, those firms now are facing not only consolidation and having to compete against even larger companies, but also this recent Supreme Court ruling that may end up working its way through the airport world eventually here. You mentioned putting, you know, airports needing to put some guardrails in place to make sure there's opportunities for small businesses to continue competing. Is there anything you have in mind on that front? I'd be very curious to hear if you've got a proposed solution or two for that.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a real specific solution. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the airports, you know, do indeed, you know, control their real estate and control the opportunities that are given to, you know, to businesses that that operate there. I think, you know, airports in a prudent way need to express what it is that they want in their program in terms of achieving local participation, ACDB participation, you know, in their merchandise mix. I think they need to be cautious, not to be overly aggressive, because, you know, we used to always joke that in the business, we would get a long list of what the airport wanted, and then we would turn to the airport and say, well, would you prioritize that for us? Because the, a lot, some of those things are conflicting, and they would say, well, we can't, they're all priorities. And, you know, so it was our challenge and our responsibility to do that. That said, you know, we've got a lot of smart people in our business who can sort those things out. But I think it's incumbent on the airports to make sure that in their procurement practices, they're clear that opportunity is created for smaller businesses and for locals. Because I think it's not only a matter of, you know, creating opportunity for those as individuals. It's an it comes down to a matter of, you know, what the image, what the experience of your concession program is going to be. Because without those types of local ACDB, some, you know, very often entrepreneurial businesses, the dynamic of the merchandise mix is going to change, and the traveling public will, you know, they might not know what's missing, but they'll feel something's missing. And they certainly, you know, as you go, whether it be to Boston or Minneapolis or anyplace else, you know, you don't want to see it become a homogeneous experience where it's all the same. You know, you want it to have the texture and the character of the community that you're in.
Makes sense. Paul McGinn, founder of Marketplace Development, thank you for taking some time. Is there anything you would like to talk about that we haven't hit on?
You know, I guess I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to chat with you today. And I would like to, you know, say hello to all my friends out there in the industry that I haven't had the opportunity to see over the last 18 months, and to frankly, thank them for their friendship and support over many years. So, wish you guys all the best, and wish you great success with your 20th anniversary conference coming up. So I'm sure it's going to be terrific.
Thank you. Hope to see you there. If you're on another trip to Greece or overseas, I can understand prioritizing that as well.
But I appreciate that understanding.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time and for your insights. Let's keep in touch.
Very good. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.